evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is April 3rd, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening for our first quarter wrap-up. If you haven't taken a look at the annual wrap-up that we did in January, I would encourage you to do that. That's our comprehensive overview. I'm going to focus tonight on the things that have happened in the first quarter that really inform and add to what we talked about in the annual wrap-up. So I hope you'll access that at the subscriber resource page. Our theme tonight is spring fever. Today and this month is the blossoming of spring where I live. I've just driven back from Pennsylvania. You see spring sort of breaking out all over many different parts of North America. I hope it's spring where you are, and I hope it's as beautiful there as it is here. It's a reminder of one of my favorite themes or passages from Scripture, from the Song of Solomon. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of the birds has come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land. Spring is a reminder that a great source of our wealth is what the earth bursts forth every year. It's an enormous gift and one that we should be very thankful for. And as we watch the human race squabble and fight over all sorts of resources, it's important to remember that the vast majority of our resources come to us as a gift. And it's a very abundant one we should appreciate. And it reminds me again of the extraordinary opportunity of what could happen if we could re-engineer our financial system to align with our environmental ecosystem. So if our places could have financial ecosystems where we could optimize. People keep saying there's no room for growth. There's tremendous financial growth if you reorganize the financial system and heal the environment and bring us into alignment with the environment. Tremendous growth that can come on the financial side. All those greedy investment bankers can make money healing the environment. So don't believe that it's not possible to live in harmony with the planet and have financial growth. It's very possible. I want to talk in five sections tonight. And if you access the links at your subscriber links on the blog or at the resource page for this first quarter wrap-up, you will find that we put up a web presentation. I call it a comic book, so it's not a written transcript of our talk. It's bullet points, graphs, charts, and it will help you follow along. So I hope you take advantage of that, and feel free to go over to the blog or the resource page, get that link, and check it out and follow along. Many of the graphs and charts we'll use for our audio-video presentation, so you can see them in that as well. So I want to cover five areas, and let me describe what they are. The first is reorganizing the global consumer. The second, global geopolitics. The third, what's going on in USA, particularly in the economy. Then money and markets, and finally, breakaway, which is the steps you and I can take to facilitate our own breakaway. Reorganizing the global consumer. We started a process in the 1990s with a series of trade agreements that accelerated the reorganization of the global labor markets, and that was part of facilitating what I refer to as engineering of the financial coup d'etat. If you as a subscriber, Solari Report subscriber, have not watched the wonderful video of Sir James Goldsmith talking about this as a fundamental shift in the relationship between capital and labor, we put it up once again in the comic book. And it's a marvelous description, even though it was filmed in 1994, of exactly what's going on in the economy today. But that was an unleashing of a reengineering of the labor market and the relationship between labor and capital. What we're seeing now is possibly even more dramatic. In 2013, manufacturers shipped over 1 billion smartphones. And what is happening is that the mantle of the largest consumer market, which for many decades was the United States, now at about approximately 317 million, which had moved to the European Union when the European Union was created, a market of 503 million people, approximately now, has now shifted to something called people who are online. Almost 2 billion people now online, connected with devices that are increasingly very unique. Smartphones are an integration of media, entertainment, financial transactions, and I should say it's also tablets. So we have almost 2 billion people online, and they control a significant majority of the media attention and the financial transactions on the planet. Not to say that we can't get the other 6 billion, 7 billion plus online as well and start to bring them into the media attention and financial transactions of the first 2 billion. So this process, as we reorganized the labor markets in the 90s and still continuing, now we've started to reorganize the consumer markets in ways that it is increasingly hard to fathom. So let's turn to the first part, mobile ready. What does it mean when media and entertainment and financial transactions can be merged into one medium, particularly if that medium can involve subliminal programming and entrainment and all sorts of other things? If you haven't listened to the Solari report on entrainment, you must do it, particularly given the direction that things are going. The other thing is, even though I call this mobile ready, if you look at what is happening with the chipping and the digitizing of everything and the connection through the internet, what's called the Internet of Things, we're talking about something that's much bigger than just smartphones. We're talking about literally digitizing and setting up just about everything to communicate. Given the invasiveness of the different systems, whether it's government or private entities or just, you know, hackers listening in, there's serious questions about what is this going to be like if everybody and everything is connected in these ways. One of the big questions coming out of this is will the Snowden revelations create a balkanized internet? We're seeing groups around the world start to question the safety of these different systems and try and figure out a way to create something regionally. A very interesting development. We'll see how it evolves. There are tremendous implications for the equity markets, as we talked about in the annual wrap-up, with literally, I described it as two models, Global 2.0 and 3.0. Global 3.0 is the models that work well in a networked world. 2.0 is the industrial model, and we're watching a shift. And many, many companies are making that shift successfully. Many others are not. And this shift is important. So it's going to have tremendous impact on the financial markets. And it's one of the reasons I have said for quite a while, you've heard me both in the wrap up and in Money and Markets talk about the divergence within the market. I put up in the comic book a comparison of four stocks just to give you a sense of the magnitude of what's going on. One was the gold ETF. One is an index for the S&P 500. One is Lockheed Martin, the largest defense contractor and the largest government contractor. So this is, if any company runs day-to-day the nuts and bolts of the U.S. government, it's Lockheed Martin. And then the social media ETF, which is a lot of the different companies involved in building the sort of the social media and doing a lot of what the mobile advertising and mobile payment action is developing. And what you can see is the social media and defense contractor have performed way ahead over the last year of S&P, and social media has been falling, and with the Ukraine and other things around the world, Lockheed has continued on up. It's very interesting, but both of them moving very ahead of the market index. I also put up an information in a chart on Freescale Semiconductor. This spring, Freescale was nominated one of the 50 most innovative companies in 2014 by MIT Technology Review. The achievements of Freescale highlighted in the report is that they make tiny computers for the Internet of Things. One of the things they noted was 2 square millimeter size of a Freescale chip that has a processor, memory, and other functions. So they're noted for the tiny chips and the creating capacity for the Internet of Things. On March 3rd, Freescale Semiconductor released its first 11 radio frequency power products suitable for U.S.-based defense market application. On March 8, 2014, 20 employees of Freescale Semiconductor on their way to China disappeared with Malaysia Flight 370. We've seen questions all over the internet. One of the subscribers asked, do I think there's a connection? We don't know. The reason I highlighted this is it's perfectly possible. If you look at the importance of this kind of intellectual capital and related patents, you're going to see this kind of squabbling over who gets the knowledge and who has control of it. So could it be possible that the disappearance of Malaysia 370 related to the fact that there were 20 Freescale Semiconductors on the plane? You betcha. That doesn't make it so, but that's the kind of economic warfare we need to be watching for. Retail 2.0 to 3.0, second category within this reorganizing the global consumer. If you look at what's happening within the retail area, it's unbelievably dynamic. I put up a commentary called Bits and Atoms in the first quarter. And I should say, we've listed at the bottom of the comic book all of the top commentaries as well as the reports we did in the first quarter. So you have just those as wonderful resources right there. But what I talked about was the extent to which goods and services are now going to be purchased online and delivered, you know, whether it's by Amazon's drones or by the post office, or whether we're going to keep going down to the shopping malls throughout the country. What you see as you drive around is more and more large warehouses and transportation facilities are popping up at the edge of the cities. And what's happening is that we're seeing the malls begin to empty out. And so you're seeing literally this shift from the shopping mall into the warehouse, which is in fact delivering the online purchases. But lots of other creative issues of, do people use their mobile phone to test and price things out as they're wandering through the store? So it's not a matter of bits or atoms. It's very dynamic ways of sort of reorganizing both of them. As part of this, the numbers are quite astronomical, and it gets back to this number of people online. We see last year just the app store at Apple, not the whole store, not the full Apple store, just the app store, sold $10 billion of sales in apps. In December, their app sales were $1 billion. That's equivalent to the annual revenues of the government of Greenland. So we have literally the Apple store, the app store at the Apple store surpassing numerous number of governments in size. It's quite astonishing. I put up a stock chart of a couple of sort of the retail 2.0 companies and 3.0, and it's very interesting. You see literally from the beginning of the century, so I show from about 2003, you look at Sears, Macy's, JCPenney, their stocks are essentially flat, whereas I added Vipshop and Apple, who are skyrocketing beyond them, Vipshop being one of the online stores in China. And you literally see, again, this tremendous divergence between 2.0 and 3.0. Now, what does it mean to you and me? There are lots of changes. One is, much of this is going to be re-engineering costs in a variety of different areas down. So if you look at what it cost me once upon a time to have, you know, 11,000 CDs or songs, which is the number of songs I have in my iPad, and buy them all in physical form as opposed to download them and put them on the iPod, big, big savings. So one of the things you want to look at in anything that can be done digitally is how can you re-engineer your expenses down? And also identify the market opportunities. There are tremendous number of opportunities for small business and entrepreneurs, but it, as I keep saying, it means we have to keep on learning. So this is the shift from retail 2.0 to 3.0 is good news for some people, bad news for others. It can be good news for consumers if they're paying attention and spending the time. A couple of items about who's fading away. TV continues to hold its numbers, but if you look at what it's drawing and how it's working, clearly a deterioration in many areas, although we have some pretty interesting content, especially for internet TV. Cable is clearly dying, as far as I can tell, and Hollywood is struggling to maintain control and keeps running to Washington to try and sort of rig their way back into the game. But and no doubt this is going to be tough on the physical theater. So watch the recreation of Bits and Atoms around the consumers. It's going to be very interesting, and again, it's going to be global, and with more of the sales coming from Asia than coming from North America or the EU. Okay, next section within this global consumer reorganization, consumers just do it. One of the things we're seeing, as more and more consumers get online, find each other, talk to each other, they're getting more and more fed up with the traditional systems. They're getting fed up with 2.0, but they're getting fed up with being lied to by media and government. And I put up some wonderful examples of this. There are walkaways and workarounds happening everywhere. You see a wonderful movie that I watched in the first quarter, Dallas Buyers Club, about a group of citizens in Dallas who have AIDS and just have it with the traditional medical system and go to Mexico and just find a way to get the drugs and supplements and nutrition they need. As I mentioned on the Solari report earlier, or in March, the best coverage I thought of Malaysia 370 was on Reddit. You just had citizens all over the world sort of doing a much newer, updated version of what we did with unanswered questions on 9/11, which is just get online and start trying to ascertain what facts we knew, what they mean. Remarkable, some of the most responsible coverage on any of these sort of mysteries. So great example. And of course, the one I love is Kickstarter comes up with past the $1 billion mark. And so perfect example of where the market wants to have micro equity financing, wants to have stock markets for small business, wants to have stock markets for communities, but it can't do it. And so at some point we just say, okay, we can't have equity markets, no problem. We'll just give each other $1 billion. So amazing, amazing workaround. We saw the Obamacare deadline come and go very, very recently. And what we're seeing is a lot of people just walk away and say, something, I'm not paying for the service because I don't trust the system anymore. I'm going to pay the fee. I'm going to find a workaround. I put up in the first quarter a wonderful documentary. I gave it a big gold Solari star called Second Opinion. You had a very, very credible team out what Mount Sinai had done years ago in terms of suppressing evidence on the beneficial benefits of Laetril when it came to treatment of cancer. It's an astonishing production, and the fact that it came out and came out in the way it did is a perfect example of the kind of critical mass that's building and saying, we're going to break through. We're just going to walk away. We're just going to do it. It's tax time, and tax time is a time where if you haven't gotten fed up, you're very likely to do it. The double standard gets very painful because you're looking at what you're paying and you're looking at what large corporations are not paying, and what you're realizing, you're paying money into a system that in fact is using that money to do things that are harmful to you. So it's kind of like you're paying the sheriff of Nottingham, you're funding his budget to torture you. And it's a time of real accountability. There's a tremendous amount of frustration in the United States that I've noticed. And in any place around the country where people right now are in the taxes, I see great frustration. Part of it is that a variety of different investors are taking gains. And that means, if you needed to downsize your precious metals, many of those investors have taken big gains. And if you had money in the equity, in the North American equity markets, and you feel it's high and you're taking gains, you're noticing it's a very expensive cut, especially when a lot of that gain represents deflation. Inflation. And so, so tax time is a very painful time. And what I would say is, given what's been going on over the last year and tax time and the frustration with unemployment, with the fallen household incomes, that the 2014 elections coming up were going to be very meaningful. And by meaningful, I mean voters are going to come out, they're going to care, and they're going to vote in such number that even the voting machines can't rig it. We've reached a point where I think many people are beginning to realize incompetence and corruption are cover stories, and they're cover stories for a system that doesn't, it never corrects, because in fact, those are just cover stories. The problem is not incompetence or corruption. The problem is that we're engineering the system in a way which is outside the laws we believe it to be and as written on the books, and it's a plan. Well, April Fool's Day, or plus one from the Supreme Court, the 2014 elections have just been negated. The Supreme Court has now essentially removed any barriers to or any restrictions on how much can be given to a candidate. And so now we're going to see billionaires be able to give one candidate $1 billion. What that tells me, it tells me a couple things. One is that the sort of the leadership was very concerned that even the voting machines wasn't going to do it this time, that the anger is this bad. Part of it being Harry Reid saying he's not going to support the president on the trade agreements, you know, because real fear of the electorate. The other is there's no doubt about it. What Mr. Global wants more than anything is a constitutional convention. Don't go for it. Don't go along. It's a nightmare. It's the worst thing we could possibly get because they will hijack the process. But you have activists for many years who've been pounding the drums and saying they need it because of election financing reform. And so this is just going to make it stronger. And unfortunately, as bad as this is, it's not as bad as what they can do with a constitutional convention. So beware, beware, beware. I posted in our bullet points for this discussion, a link to the first quarter Salieri report on FBAR development. So for the two, one of the parts of the filing on April 15th for U.S. individuals, there's a discussion of what you have to do if you own precious metals, as well as the FBAR form, which is due on June 30. So if you need to attend to those, I would recommend you take a look at that special report again. Okay, last part of our discussion of reorganizing the global consumer is Business Just Do It. We talked about Consumer Just Do It. Let's talk about Business Just Do It, because when you have this integration, again, of media, entertainment, and financial transactions into one device, particularly a device that an individual is going to keep with them for many, many hours during the day, you're talking about all sorts of integration occurring and all sorts of industries now sort of competing for each other's businesses. And so we're watching, we're literally watching lines between different business sectors melt away and business models change in radical ways. One of the big ones is cutting out the finance guys. So we have hospitals saying, you know, we can't afford the insurance companies. We can't deliver decent care and give the insurance companies their spread. So we are going to start insurance companies and we'll just insure the patients and take care of them too. So the hospital's backing into the insurance company's margins. Silicon Valley, of course, is trying to re-engineer everything into an app. But certainly they're trying to re-engineer the brokerage business and the banking business into apps. And there are all sorts of examples of what they're up to. We see T-Mobile offering banking services, again, trying to cut the banks out and offer something. So you see this telecommunications versus banks thing happening. More websites, peer-to-peer lending. When peer-to-peer lending started, that means an individual lending money to other individuals. There was a lot of pressure from the powers that be to kind of assert control of these things, but they're growing and they continue to grow and it's going to be more and more difficult to stop them. We see the Chinese online stores doing more and more with peer-to-peer lending and sort of lending. We see PayPal financing purchases. So it's happening and it's going to grow. Virtual currency kind of cut out the credit card companies, there's tremendous opportunity in virtual currencies to lower the financial transactions costs and fees, and that's part of the interest in them, despite my skepticism and the risks that are attendant with that. Finally, we see Walmart and Apple suing credit card companies, saying, look, you're taking too much of the spread. Part of it is, if you look at someone like Walmart, their margins are getting squeezed terribly as the economy softens and household income goes down. So that 1-3% that the credit card companies might be taking is potentially the thing that could keep them alive. So cutting out the finance guys is something we're seeing, but there are all sorts of these examples of companies sort of going after each other's business. And for you as a consumer or a business person, some of these areas are going to offer opportunities for you. The Vatican, the mother of all reengineering. So I know you're thinking, oh, well, that's a religious organization. Vatican and the endowments in and behind and around it is a huge global business, particularly in those areas where people are not angry and still paying their 10% tithes. So we've talked a lot last year and throughout the first quarter about the Vatican, what's going on in the Vatican. It is the mother of all reengineerings. So it's worth keeping an eye on. And it's the largest global institution that's having to rebalance from a governance structure that's very much controlled in the developed world to one that's much more sensitive to the emerging markets. Finally, regulators take their pound of flesh as all of this squeezing of the margins and deflation of revenues goes on. Government's got the same problem. They've got an enormous number of agencies and regulators. And, you know, we saw in the 80s, particularly around the war of drugs, but it's now spread into many other areas, more and more of the enforcement agencies on a for-profit model where they make money from seizures, they make money from civil money penalties. So we have regulators out on the hunt and they're taking their pound of flesh, and that's not unconnected to the fact that we have bankers getting hit by trains and jumping off buildings and, I would say, being thrown in front of trains and thrown off of buildings. So the regulators are out there taking the pound of flesh, and I would say for many of the big financial institutions, it is a difficult time, not to say that their stocks aren't still doing well and they still don't have advantages, which are, beyond sinful. Okay, well, that's it for reorganizing the consumer markets. I want to stress again that that this is going to be very, very important, because one of the ways that we all have a dramatic impact on what happens in this world is where we give our attention, whether it's media attention or political attention, and who and how we engage in transactions, whether they're purchases or financial transactions or donations. And when all of these cash flows gets re-engineered, it's literally within that space, there is an opportunity to reinvent our world and reinvent it in the ways that we wish. And there's going to be opportunities too. So I have to tell you that I think the reorganization of consumer markets is going to be as profoundly impactful as the reorganization of the labor markets, even maybe more so, but it's something that's going to rock our world. It's rocking our world now. Please pay attention to it and look for ways to find opportunity for yourself and to protect you from some of the more unpleasant areas, particularly the compromising of our privacy. And as it is tax time, the other thing I have to say is please be impeccable. Remember the people who are listening to your phone calls and reading your bank accounts and watching all your transactions are also the people who are collecting your taxes. So don't assume that they don't know. I'm sure they do if they want to. Okay, second section, global geopolitics. I warned in the annual wrap-up, as I have for many years, that our greatest danger is not the risk of global financial collapse. Our greatest risk is war, because the reason we haven't had a financial collapse is the slow burn is engineered, and the thing that keeps the slow burn working is force. And when covert force doesn't work, we get overt force in the nature of war. What's happening is very simple. I keep telling the story of Jimmy Rogers at the New Orleans Gold Conference. Somebody asked him if he was worried about peak oil. He said, forget peak oil, it's peak everything. We're watching stress of growing populations engaged in greater consumption. The models that we're using for the financial system and investment are designed for control, not to create the incentives to live in a harmony with the environment. If you look at the proposals to shift us to a model of carbon tax and things like it, it's a very top-down controlled model. It's not a model that's going to work. It's going to be very ugly. They're wonderful models. They're ways of doing it that are bottom-up and create the incentives in the markets to allow people to reinvent how we do it. The problem with those models is that they don't guarantee that the people who are in control now will remain in control. Control or leadership and governance will be much more driven by meritocracy. Anyway, so we're watching the stress of growing populations in the face of harsh weather, environmental risks, and ongoing disaster capitalism. And the use of force is increasing, and that raises risks throughout the global economy. And there's no greater example than our first section, grain, gas, pipelines, debt, the dance in the Ukraine. We've put up a tremendous amount of commentaries and stories on what's going on in the Ukraine to the extent we know it. You have America and Europe and various American and European corporations in the Ukraine as the price of wheat and gas rise. You have more and more sort of corporate interests moving in. You have the Ukraine is one of the greatest bread baskets in the world, and of course they're the transmission point for much gas, much pipelines, and it's all part of the grand chessboard Eurasia issue that has been with us now for years. And so Ukraine is, there's no doubt, a plum, and as I've said on previous Solari reports, Ukraine is a plum which really hasn't managed itself well. Their per capita income has remained at the same levels that they were in the early 90s, whereas Russia and Poland have, and other areas around them, have improved dramatically. They've stayed sort of flat. And in these situations, you get a dynamic of use it or lose it. When you have America and Europe promoting NATO, trying to get the Ukraine into the European Union, you really create enormous insecurity in Russia. It's a little bit like having the Russians down in Cuba messing around. We're playing somewhat in their playpen. Now, if you look at the tensions between the Ukraine, with the exception of some of the Russian populations, and Russia, those are plenty. So the opportunities for divide and conquer are absolutely enormous. And at this point, you just have too many powerful forces, all the money in the planet, working and divide and conquering and playing all sorts of games. So I won't bore you with all the details. But what we're seeing is, as part of the fight, is more and more sanctions flying back and forth between the United States, Russia, and the European Union. And all of these things are negative on the economy. This kind of fighting is very negative on the economy. And so we're really pushing a very deflationary kind of process. If you look behind the scenes, I'm not convinced what's happening is so much a battle between sovereign nations, is a battle between sort of which corporations are going to get to cut up the pie. And I think if you look at the Russians, from what I know of them and what I can intuit through between the lines, is for them this is much more about whether they're going to be a sovereign nation or whether they're going to get picked over the way they were in the 90s. Not to say that they haven't picked over the Ukraine, including what happened at Chernobyl. So you had the rape of Russia in the 90s, and I've posted some things about that. Obviously, World War II, they lost 27 million people. So the Russians have gotten rolled on many occasions, and I think Putin has done everything he can to rebuild from the rape of Russia in the 90s. And this is not just about the economy or national interests. This is about governance models. Russia wants to be a sovereign nation. It wants to run itself. it wants to be able to protect its immediate interests, whether it's access to the Black Sea or, you know, protect Russians in the Crimea. So these are all sort of sovereign interests, and Russia has made it very clear, Putin has made it very clear, he does not want Russia to be run by corporations. So I think you're seeing a fairly deep struggle in values, one between a nation that does not want to be corporations, does not want to have, you know, GMO seed dictated to it, does not want to have NSA listening to everything. They're thinking very much in terms of, we want to, you know, we want to be a sovereign nation, and we want the individuals within us to have certain rights of sovereignty. So this is a deeper struggle. One of the subscribers asked, is this a squabble between the Russians and the Rothschilds? I wouldn't so much say the Rothschilds, because it gets back to who's in control. The question is, does Russia determine what goes on in Russia, or do a group of corporations and invasive surveillance technology determine what's going on in Russia? So there's a real sort of struggle in terms of sovereignty, which is why I think some of the sanctions are going to boomerang, and you're literally watching a competition between two groups who have very different values. Right in the middle of it, we have the IMF making big loans. That money's not going to the Ukraine. It's going back to hedge funds and banks, both in Russia and Europe and probably in the United States. The one thing I think that is sort of the lesson coming out of this is I see more and more people beginning to understand the tactic of soft revolutions and soft weapons. Charles Smith is going to be joining us a week after next to talk about soft weapons, because I think it's very, very important to understand the kind of tactics that the people who control the telecommunication systems and can deliver entrainment can affect, how they can affect a population and sort of the weapons they have to use. I also think you're seeing a growing backlash. The frustration that was going to be expressed in the elections here is the same frustration you're seeing around the world of people and nations who are sick of the invasiveness. And unfortunately, we see too much of the leadership is what I call blinded by the beauty of their weapons. And I think they underestimate the risk and the dangers of these backlashes. It doesn't have to, you know, the tactics that I think they're using are increasingly wasteful, and the backlash is increasingly tense. We see, unfortunately, NASA announced this week the cooperation with the Russians in space is off. It doesn't surprise me if the Americans are using this as an excuse to really leave themselves much freer to proceed with space-based weapons. Finally, of course, we see G8 downsizing to G7 as part of this dance. A lot happening just this week, and so I think this is a very fluid story. Could this get very bad? Yes, it could get very bad. One of the stories I posted up on the blog in the dance in Ukraine section is amazing story entitled U.S. Secretly Built Cuban Twitter to Stir Unrest. Great background if you want to understand the soft revolution and soft weapon issue, and I recommend it to you. It was interesting, during the initial couple weeks of problems in the Ukraine, we saw in Putin, the Russians sort of moving into the Crimea, I would get so many emails saying, oh, well, you know, the United States is weak and Russia's, you know, there's at least sort of lots of games trying to position people in sort of cheap emotional ways. And the dollar's going down. And so I put up the charts of the S&P versus the Russian market and the emerging market, as well as the S&P versus wheat and natural gas during the period. And I would encourage you, whenever you're watching stories like this, to always watch the charts, because the charts will always tell you, or often tell you, a very different story than what you're sort of hearing is the spin, whether it's in the corporate media and the alternative media. And I, for one, I have a lot of faith in Price, no matter how manipulated it is to talk about what's going on. So take a look at those, because it's always interesting to see. One of the things you're seeing is as the price of wheat and natural gas goes up, the fight gets worse. Next section under geopolitics, the quiet dread of Fukushima. I think that what is happening at Fukushima is unbelievably important. I continue to do everything I can to try and ascertain what's happening and what it means. I think the unanswered questions only grow. We've watched Japan engage in massive monetary expansion, and of course their stock market was up tremendously last year. I put up the chart of Tokyo Electric Power versus the Japanese ETF, and what you can see, of course, is Tokyo Power is down more than 80%, but of course it doesn't go down all the way. Tokyo needs its electric utility, so clearly the government continues to support it. But I did want to point out, we had a great interview with Don Cox during the first quarter, and he offered in sort of a much more positive alternative view on Japan, which is, if you're interested, I would really encourage you to do. I will continue to try and find answers to the unanswered questions of Fukushima, but for now they just grow, and I would continue to ask that we continue to pray for all concerned. I think this is an issue that is so important, so serious, it calls for prayer. Reform and slowdown in China and the emerging markets. There's no doubt that Chinese growth for many years has depended on enormous leverage in local municipalities, in the shadow banking system, and massive subsidies of various kinds. And clearly that had to come to an end. The corruption in China has become just very significant and a real danger to their long-term economic growth. So we see reform of the Chinese shadow banking system. Don't be surprised if we see a deposit scheme, government deposit guarantee come out that will sort of help build the regular banks, which will of course emerge as the largest in the world. But it means much slower growth in China, and that means much slower growth in the emerging markets. So if Europe is not buying from China, then China is not buying from Brazil, and so it goes around in a circle. And of course, as we talked a lot last year and in the wrap-up, G7 continues to call the capital homeward. I put up a chart of the emerging market ETF versus the S&P 500. One of the things I was eager to see is, would the emerging markets turn up? No, they continued down. From the beginning of the year, they were down about 5%. Now, they started to turn up, but we'll see if it holds. We continue to see enormous divergence between the developed markets and emerging markets. And, of course, the day that turns, or the time that turns, it could be a very significant shift, because now you're paying a price earnings ratio for earnings in the developed markets that's way above what you're paying in the emerging markets. Energy breakthroughs, and I put this in global geopolitics because energy is something that impacts everything, and it impacts everybody everywhere, not to mention the fact that, the reserve currency is on a petrodollar standard. We see renewables growing in very sort of yeasty organic ways, lots of different kinds of renewables. The clear direction in the developed world is let's do some of everything and see how it goes. Fracking continues to move to Europe with this battle with Russia. That's going to increase the pressure on Europe to say yes to fracking. One of the most important developments for renewables is the battery. I put up a picture of a mock-up of the new Tesla Gigafactory? The mega factory that Tesla is planning. A lot of what they're doing is work, sort of breakthrough work in battery. If the battery solution gets solved, what it means is wind, solar, all the different renewables get much more competitive. So creative destruction is already on us, whether it's what's actually happening in renewables or what's threatened with other breakthrough technology, or just the fear of investors that it's coming. we see real struggling in the utilities and other areas, and of course more running to the state house and the capital of the country is trying to get protection to keep their sort of 2.0 model going. So this is going to be a very dynamic area. One of the funniest things going on is around the world, you have many different inventors working on many different technologies, all of whom are convinced that their technology will rock the world. And what is not understood is getting something out of the lab into a workable both business model and consumer model is much harder than any inventor can imagine. And so translating something from an invention to a business is a big step. And then, of course, you have many, many inventors at the same time. So this is going to be a very creative area, and the politics are going to be intense. And, of course, I don't think you're going to see adaption of very significant breakthrough technology until unless the question of what is the reserve currency and what standard is on gets sorted out as part of a process, because this is not just an energy question, it's a currency question. Another big question is how will energy work with the Internet of Things? We know Tesla felt that energy could be delivered through things like wireless technology. So the question is, will that happen? I put up a chart of one of the solar ETFs. We've seen the solar and many of the renewable stocks really bubble. And these stocks have traded way ahead of the market, and many of us would argue way beyond their real economic value. So one of the questions is there a real bubble happening here? But it's you'll see it's way ahead of the regular market indices. And maybe some of it is just people saying, you know, we've had it with 2.0. We went 3.0 now, so we're going to put our money in that sort of you go jump in the lake investment decision. USA, third section. The first quarter has been very challenging in North America. North America has been responding to multiple stresses. Of course, one is very extreme weather in many parts of the country, whether it's too much snow and too much cold or too much drought. So let's focus just on several key areas where the local action can make an enormous difference in building a stronger economy. The 1-2 punch on small business is the first thing I want to talk about. Small business is taking it on the chin, on the stomach, in the back. It's incredible. We started with Obamacare, which is a tremendous burden on small business. Then, of course, small businesses struggled with the heating bills or the energy bills that come with the kind of weather we've had in many different parts of the country. But then, of course, the weather hurt sales for many businesses as well. So they've really struggled with the economic hit of Obamacare, then the economic hit of weather and heating bills. They're struggling with the shift from retail 2.0 to 3.0 that requires time and an investment in new technology. And that's a big struggle. And a lot of little businesses and retailers are getting shifted out by the online stores. We have the president and states working on minimum wage that can change the economics of many small businesses, including putting some out of business. We continue to have more and more regulatory burdens and enforcement, and of course, I don't think that's an accident. For example, food safety rules are, to me, designed absolutely to facilitate the roll-up of small farms and small grocery stores into companies that are publicly traded and give big political donations. Finally, tax time is very painful because small business is paying its taxes. And I put up this story we had up on the blog that 26 top American corporations paid no federal income tax from 2008 to 2012. So the hypocrisy is enormous. And of course, we see many American corporations building up just unprecedented cash stores offshore. They can't bring them back without paying taxes, so they just keep them offshore. They're not bringing them home and paying taxes. But again, the double standard, as it is for individuals, is very painful for small business people. All of these things mean that small business can't grow employment the way it could. And that, of course, is very painful. We see in the new Treasury budget justifications on next year's budget a proposal that any business, I think more than 10, is mandated to acquire a 401k. Now, what that means as a practical matter is a company, all these small businesses are going to put a percent of their profit into a 401k, which is going to require by law to be invested in the big corporations who are coming into that neighborhood and trying to take away their market share. It's a little bit like financing the guy you're competing with, and if you keep doing that, you're going to fail. I would say the question, of course, in all this is, well, Catherine, where's the opportunity? One of the opportunities when you create those 401ks, get together at the Rotary or the Chamber, get together with everybody locally and figure out how you can create a 401k with a component where money is flows into local investment opportunities, a community venture fund, community REIT, community loan program. There are lots of different ways to do it, but it's time we started to get together and think strategically. Lots of small businesses putting a tiny portion of their money into 401ks where employees can check an option that allows local investment. Wow, that's a real opportunity. Our cartoonist, Bob Parsons, did a wonderful cartoon on taxation. It's up on the comic book. I recommend it to you. The targeting of municipal officials and public pension funds. Oh, my God. Now we have Warren Buffett calling public pension funds tapeworms. It's like, Warren, you stole my expression. That's not the first time he's used it. What is this all about? It is very important if Mr. Global is going to control politically and control the resources that we get the local, state and local officials out of the way and we get control of the public pension funds before we try and re-engineer government money by place. If we re-engineer government money and re-engineer investment by place before they get control of the public pension funds, guess who's going to control the action? It's going to be the public pension funds in combination with the state and local officials. So it's a little bit like, you know, before the game begins, you attack your chief competitor so you can make sure you have control. Not to say that some public pension funds don't have problems. We see all sorts of studies from the Pew Foundation, others. I think a lot of it is exaggerated. Generally, I think the public pension funds have done a relatively good job. The big problem public pension funds have is on the healthcare side. It's not so much their pension benefits, but on the healthcare benefits where they're woefully underfunded. But you certainly can't point a finger at them. Take a look at the whole federal government. The other problem is as we go into a world where more and more of the population live in megacities, that gives the mayors and state officials a lot more power than the feds. So this is really, think of this as the same, as I said, the businesses are cutting into each other's margins. You see the feds moving in on the state and local governments. They want the cash flows. They want the power. They want the authority. And now with the technology, they really don't need. We don't need a very paperful, expensive state, federal, local government. And so the question is going to be who gets re-engineered out, who gets automated. And so I would say that the best offense, the best defense is a good offense. And that's what you see folks like the federal government who have got the Department of Justice running around and trying to do criminal indictments of Tom, Dick, and Harry, including for, you know, games with traffic patterns. So see this for what it is. It's also part of the scapegoating government. We've taken all the assets out of government, moved them into private corporations, moved all the liabilities back. And now that the governments have all the liabilities, we're going to blame all the problems on them. And the private guys are going to be the good guys. They've got the money. You know, they've got the technology. They're going to control. And this is just a way of, you know, the ultimate liability is blaming the government for everything that happens. So see this for what it is. It's a clever offense that's really sort of parading, you know, or is happening in place of a what should be a defense. As our hero for the quarter is someone that I just learned about. We, on the Saleri Report in the first quarter, we had the wonderful PBS documentary on Louisville about the Louisville Orchestra and the relationship between the economic health of Louisville and its dedication to great music. And it told the story of Mayor Charlie Farnsworth, who was the mayor of Louisville a remarkable man, an attorney by trade, became the mayor. As the mayor, led the effort to raise capital and interest in building really one of the most avant-garde orchestras in the world, and in encouraging and attracting composers from all over the world to do it. It's quite remarkable. As I said to one of the people at the Solari team, because one of the things he did was got a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. Can you imagine the Rockefeller Foundation did something really, really wonderful? Anyway, but it's a great story. Charlie Farnsworth finally ran for Congress, got up to Congress, was there for 2 years, and said, "That's it, I'm never coming back," and refused to run for another term. This is a man near and dear to my heart. He invented Rebel Yell Whiskey, which is one of my favorite whiskeys, and started a press for Southern writing called Lost Cause Press. A true Renaissance man. But his story shows the extraordinary things that one person can do. In fact, it reminds me a little bit that I truly love the mayor of Hickory Valley. And in fact, I got him to promise he would join us on the Solari Report in October. He runs the, among other hats, he runs the Hickory Valley Cotton Gin. And it's an extraordinary example of somebody who, wearing all these different hats, whether it's creating businesses and creating employment or serving as the mayor, makes the place fantastic. And part of the key to success in any place is you got to find the Charlie Farnsworths and support them. And that is our opportunity in the election this year. Forget about the Supreme Court. Forget about, what the feds are up to. Forget presidential elections. There is so much can be done if we get the Charlie Farnsworths in control locally. It's so, so important. So 2014 election, pay close attention to the local elections. You can get a lot done there. Unemployment, what's the plan? We had a great Solari report in the first quarter with John Williams from Shadow Stats. We now have more than 100 million Americans on mean-tested subsidies, and we're expecting 40 to 50% of the current jobs to be automated in the next decade or two. What's the plan? How exactly is this supposed to work? I will tell you, when I worked in Washington in the early 1990s, the plan at that time was, well, let's give everybody the equivalent of those dollars, $600, and have everybody live on that. Sometimes I see, as I watch household income fall. It's as though they're trying to re-engineer expenses down so that everybody can live on $600 a month. I continue to be baffled by what the plan is, but I will tell you there's extraordinary opportunity. Speaking of workarounds, one of the great workarounds is if we take the federal budget and the state and local budget and say, okay, where are we paying somebody $25 an hour to do something that someone in this here neighborhood would be happy to do for $10 plus healthcare? There are unbelievable untold reengineering opportunities, and I always use, I'm going to bore you guys to death with the food stamp example. We are outsourcing customer service, last time I looked, in 37 states to JPMorgan Chase in India, where for a big markup, they're doing the jobs that the people who are getting food stamps could do. And if they were doing those jobs, they wouldn't need food stamps. So we're paying twice for one function. Makes no sense, not to mention the fact that there's boku farmland lying fallow, people who would love to do farming, and that farming is economic, but for the food safety rules and all the different enforcement games. So if you take a look at our economy by place and the government budgets, what you discover is a lot of corporate earnings are held up with government contracts and government purchases that are not economic. They're fees for our friends, as I have told that story many times, but we're all guilty of playing the fees for our friends game. And we need to start looking, it's called participatory budgeting, we need to start looking at how the money works in our place, and we need to start bleeding into those margins that are occurring on a non-economic basis. And don't think for a second that the reason they don't want that constitutional convention is they know we're going to start doing that if things keep going the way they are going, and they want the kind of control that they need to stop it. So, one, don't support a constitutional convention, and two, start looking at how all the money works in your place and seeing where the opportunities are for you and your business and your family. They're bound to be there. One of the things I did is I put up in the comic book a chart that shows, we put up John Williams' Shadow Stats description of what he believes real unemployment is. But we also put up the average U.S. per capita income in the country compared to the average federal employee salary right now. The average U.S. per capita income, $42,000. The average federal employee salary is $78,000. So we're all paying our taxes so that people who make $78,000 a year can institute all sorts of stuff outside the law and which are great for generating more wealth for the 0.01% and bad for us. So I know many, and I've worked with many wonderful federal employees, and I'm sure some of them are sitting there thinking, oh, that's way too cruel. But unfortunately, it's really not. And, you know, you just cannot have a federal government where people are paid double at the civil service level with what the average household income is. It's just not a plan. Money and markets, a roundup of markets in the first quarter is up on the comic book. Pretty much flat across the board. Bonds did a tiny bit better than the S&P. Europe was pretty much flat. The emerging markets peaked up a little bit. But again, it was a fairly non-eventful quarter. Many of us were wondering if we'd start to see real moves up in emerging markets and commodities. And we saw a little bit. We certainly saw precious metals sort of peak up and then dropping back now. So not a big change. It continued to be an S&P dominant world. We saw Janet Yellen move into the position as chairman of the Fed and continue the taper, but continue to talk about the importance of supporting the economy with quantitative easing if necessary. And so we really look at the prospect of quantitative easing forever. I put up a chart that shows the treasury yields, 30-year treasury bond yield. The yield started to come down a little bit, so bonds sort of peaked up. They had a poor performance last year, but as Janet started to talk about, no, she was going to let interest rates rise. You know, we've seen the bond market under pressure in the last week or two. Pressure on the U.S. dollar for all the reasons we know. And certainly as a result, it was very interesting to watch the battle back and forth in the Ukraine and what was happening with the dollar. And of course we have Bitcoin continuing to raise its head. Bitcoin had a difficult quarter as some of the exchanges got hacked and went down. We also saw the IRS come out with a pronouncement that Bitcoin would be treated as property. We also saw one effort by media to out who the real developer of Bitcoin was, a former employee of a defense contract. You kind of wonder, okay, where is this coming from? I continue to believe that Bitcoin, no matter who invented it, who created it, who's running it, is a way for the system to prototype virtual digital currency. That's what they want. I've always said that they don't care whether you call the ultimate one world currency dollar or wampum beads. What they really want is a digital currency, and of course, one that can help them track literally the entire history of where it's been. So something like Bitcoin or many of these digital currencies is really the ultimate in terms of fiat control systems, and it's pretty scary. One thing that is true, though, and I think it's one of the things driving towards a world of digital and virtual currencies, is there are enormous savings to be had in terms of transaction fees if something like Bitcoin or a virtual currency was to be adopted globally. I put up an estimate from Business Intelligence, BI Intelligence, that is in the comic book, and what it shows is their estimate of the drop in fees that could be engineered if Bitcoin were adopted as a global payment system. And it's quite astonishing. So they're estimating that Bitcoin could cut out as much as half of the even more than half of the current sort of financial transaction fees. And that's a very, very significant savings when you've got 2 billion people online and businesses trying to organize around tiny payments and tiny amounts. And so real pressure to do that, which is one of the reasons why I think it's going to happen. U.S. equities rock on. One of the charts I had up in the QE section was a chart that shows you the tight correlation between the rise of the S&P 500 and the total assets held on the Fed's balance sheet. Very tremendous or very tight correlation between the Fed's continued support, which is why, as the Fed's taper, the big question is how will the North American markets do? But, of course, as we know, they've continued to hold their own, S&P up a little bit more than 1% for the quarter, and a strong week this week. Surprisingly, housing has not done well. How much of that was the weather, we don't know. The big question will be, how will housing do this spring? We continue to have households struggling with houses, sort of upside down. Mortgage is worth more than the appraised value of the house, and of course, household income's falling. So much of the strength in the housing market where it's been because you have areas of the country that are successful in Global 3.0, or you have big institutional investors buying up large amounts of residential housing. And so it's sort of what I expect in terms of more of a shift to rental housing from homeownership. But U.S. equities continue to be strong. If you look at some of the charts we put up, one of the things I showed was the chart, I've talked about it before, that shows from the beginning of the S&P 500. If you look at where we are in terms of PEs, we're way above the average. We see investors like Jeremy Grantham just saying, I'm not putting clients' money in this market. You can't make money if you start off this high. If you look back over the history, what you'll see is there are two times the PEs have gone dramatically above where they are now. Those are times of both the 20s and then the 2000 tech bubble. Both are times of tremendous technological innovation. And I think that we run the possibility of that. And so it's one thing to keep in mind. I call it a crash up. Another thing, Chuck Gibson on the equity reports last year pointed out that there are very few retail investors who own equities. The United States population, whether through institutions like pension funds, are really some of the only equity investors around the world. Most investors are banks or real estate. One of the things that's happening with these online systems is you're seeing efforts made all around the globe to encourage the sort of new and growing middle class to invest in mutual funds and equities. If that should get going, we could see a real shift in PEs in the equity markets and global markets. I, for one, would love to see us move to more of an equity model. An equity model is one that's going to do a great deal to harmonize business activity and the economy with what is good for people in the environment or has the potential. And so I think moving to an equity model means a much more accountable model. The other chart I put up shows the 10-year yield, the yield on the 10-year treasury compared to the S&P returns. And what we see is there's real divergence. People are getting their yields in the equity markets. They're not in the fixed income. We have Bill Gross talking, head of PIMCO, talking a lot about financial repression, which means populations, savers who've lived for years now with no yields on their bank deposits and fixed income. And what I'm seeing and feeling, particularly during tax time, is people getting very, very tired of not trying to keep their investments in things that are safe and yet getting no yield and being frustrated. And that's part of what is pushing funds into the equity markets. Okay, next section, breakaway economics. I put up my favorite cartoon ever, the one that Bob Parsons made for us. It shows a UFO above Congress, and we have little bubbles coming out of Congress. One says, "We convene this hearing to investigate the loss of $4 trillion from the Department of Defense, which has somehow been misplaced. Mr. Secretary, please pass out the DOD's ledgers. And the other bubble says, Mr. Chairman, when you know it, but it appears a UFO has abducted our accountant and all the files. And the money is rushing up into this UFO, and on it, it says Lockheed Martian. Very funny. But the question is, where is the money? You know, $40 trillion has been shifted out in the financial coup d'etat. I put a listing of and a breakdown of that $40 trillion in the annual wrap-up. Take a look at it if you're interested. Where is it? Is it being spent in space? Is it building underground facilities? Is it paying for global spraying? Is it what's financing all these mean-tested subsidies? Is it an endowment to finance a one-world government? Where's the $40 trillion? I always tell everybody, crime that pays is crime that stays. If you can steal $40 trillion, then you can buy almost everybody, and everybody knows you got away with it. So this is a major governance issue. It's also a major governance issue because as we watch the Internet of Things roll out, we're literally watching a leadership which is digitizing everything with very invasive surveillance and control technology. It's literally the integration of machines and people. I put up on the comic book a wonderful, one of my favorite videos to describe this invasiveness of the digital systems. A wonderful version of the done at the Paris Opera of Stravinsky's Nightingale. And believe it or not, it is the best artistic expression of what all this sort of Internet of Things is all about. It's absolutely fantastic, and it's now free on the Internet. So if you haven't watched it, I really encourage you to do it. If you want to really understand from, you know, a lovely artistic expression of what the Internet of Things is all about, you can find it. But clearly, I think part of it is you have a small group of people in control, and they're afraid of something. The question is, what are they afraid of? Are they just afraid of shrinking resources, a bigger and bigger population, and how a small minority can stay in control? It could be that simple. But certainly they're acting from a place of fear and trying to prevent, sort of maintain control and manage their risk. And I think our opportunity is to say, okay, well, that's what they're doing from our point of view. How can we solve the real problems and do it in a way which is a lot nicer and from a much higher mind? Because the more the global population goes to a higher level of consciousness and really fixes and addresses the problems, the more they can lower their fear levels and sort of maybe engage with us. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to move to a model that is not so dependent on force, not so dependent on violence. Let's see what happens. As you know, I think ultimately the greatest powers on this planet are spiritual, not any man-made powers. And so, I think the positive is here to be done. I don't underestimate the pain and suffering that can occur before the good guys win. But I continue to harp on the fact before we can craft real solutions, we need to understand who's really in charge and what are they afraid of. It's a question I keep asking. I've been asking it my whole life. I've been trying to get to the bottom of it. We've had some wonderful Solari reports. We had Richard Dolan on UFOs, Joseph Farrell on the metastructure, and Joseph will be back in I think April or May. It's coming up soon. Anyway, but wonderful conversations to get further and further into who's really in charge and what's going on. And then a tremendous focus you're going to see continue this year on where is that $40 trillion being reinvested in the day-to-day economy? What's the new technology that's being reinvested in? Where is that reinvestment in the infrastructure going? How does that work? Something that's very important to our businesses, our careers, and our assets and investments. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about Alibaba, because I think Alibaba is going to rock the world, and it's coming soon. Alibaba is the largest online store in the world. It was started 18 years ago in a living room in China by a school teacher who taught English and didn't know how to use a computer, but he saw the opportunity. His name is Jack Ma. As of April 2nd, their relative market capitalization, let me just read it off to you and you can find this on the comic book. General Motors had a market value of $55 billion. Goldman Sachs had a market value of $78 billion. Intel had a market value of $125 billion. And the underwriters estimated that Alibaba's market value was $140 billion, essentially three times bigger than General Motors. I put up several charts, one showing the growth of e-commerce sales in China versus the United States in 2012. The size of the e-commerce market in China surpassed the United States and is skyrocketing. It's headed towards almost double now, and it's going to grow. Two other big big internet presence in China, JD.com and Weibo, are also looking to go public. And I think when Alibaba, when the IPO happens, apparently the size that they're planning on going with is going to be bigger than Facebook. But when Alibaba comes public this spring in the United States, it's really going to focus many people in the developed world on the size of this consumer market, this 2 million people online, and the size and the juggernaut of it and the reorganization of the global consumer through online systems. So look for that IPO. None of this is an investment recommendation. One of the things you'll find is, you know, there's an old rule in the investment world, never buy on the IPO. But I've used in this presentation lots of stocks or ETFs so that you could see the dynamics of the trends we're talking about. Please, none of this is a, please don't view this as a recommendation for any of it. And at the bottom, we have a disclaimer saying if you need investment advice, seek it from a means that can give it to you and focus on your unique circumstance and based on what makes sense as a as an attractive investment for you as opposed to what's describing a trend. So please don't assume that the use of any of these is an encouragement to invest in them whatsoever. But I do think, as I said, Alibaba is going to be a bell that reminds everybody of the shift in the size of the consumer markets and what's that going to mean to our world. Okay, breakaway. Steps you can take your breakaway. Number one, bank intimate. Forget online systems. You need bankers you can trust. And I, for one, when it comes to banking, there's nothing like good old-timey, you know, bankers you can trust. I think it makes an enormous difference. I put up a link to our bank intimate page. If you haven't found a great local bank or credit union, you need to bank with people you trust. Particularly when systems are this invasive and this hackable. So you need bankers you can trust, and you need to know your bankers, and they need to know you. It's a critical part of your financial world and life. And in your community, it can be a tremendous part of your business relationship. So for heaven's sakes, you want to bank with people you can trust. 2014 elections, who knows what's going to happen in the federal elections, but you really want to make your voice heard on the local elections. Those are going to be much harder to buy and to rig. And I've seen all the money in the planet try to rig a local election, and the local folks fight back and prevent them from doing it despite the machines and everything else. So pay attention, because if you can get the Charlie Farnsworth elected, it can make an enormous difference in your safety and well-being and financial situation. So focus on the local elections. They're going to be important. As I said, tax time, please be impeccable. There is no privacy, in my opinion, and you need to be impeccable in terms of your paperwork, and you need to be impeccable in terms of your reporting. Re-engineer expenses down. A lot of this business fighting over different sectors means we're in a time when literally every month you can renegotiate your telecom bill. You need to be very creative about re-engineering your expenses down, because we're seeing a lot happen on the expense side of the financial statements, both for business and consumer. A lot is happening that's very deflationary, and you want to take advantage of that. Also, identify niche markets. Everybody moving online means that the long tail can be a great business. The long tail means very small volumes can make a lot of money and be a great business for niche players. So keep learning and looking. I put up on the blog a little blog post about my first Etsy purchase. Etsy is a website that caters to craftsmen. And if you can't find something in your local market, you may find a local player. It's going to be in another local area, but wonderful craftsmen, wonderful materials, wonderful products that are very competitive in terms of price. Look for walkaways and workarounds. I see more and more people saying, that's it. I'm, you know, whether it's healthcare or other areas, a lot around food. If you have opportunities to form circles in your area of people who are interested in helping each other, be your own doctor or be your own gardener, whatever the issues are that you're dealing with on health and food and local elections, whatever, organization can help where you organize your time and effort to be energizing for you and the people who participate. You need people you like and you need people you trust. You've got to be very careful. Reverse the spin on small business, municipal officials, and public pensions. Don't let this spin roll down on you, because if you let the spin have its way, the next thing you know, the wrong people are getting their mitts on the public pension fund money and engineering money in ways. There are lots, there are tremendous pots of assets, both at the municipalities and the state governments and in governmental corporations related to, affiliated or controlled by them. There's a competition underway for those pots, and you want to make sure that money's safe. That money is very important assets, and also assets that can be protect you from ridiculous and stupid privatizations. I always tell people, why are you letting, you know, foreigners buy your local utility? Good heavens, get together, and you know it's a good investment, especially for at least 401ks we're going to be dictated to have. Invest in yourself in the future. Do not forget to invest in yourself and the people in your family. This is a world where intellectual capital is the basis of great wealth, but we have to invest in our education, our training, and it's really about lifelong learning. Outwit the entrainment trance. All of this media, smartphones, internet, TV, all comes with entrainment. If you haven't listened to the Salieri Report on entrainment, please do before Edward Snowden. God bless Edward Snowden now. People understand what I'm saying. You want to listen to the Salieri Report I do with Charles Smith on soft weapons as well. I can't tell you how many times I see businesses, I see families played with this technology. Somebody moves into a place like the Ukraine and they are working people, divide and conquer. And there are very few teams or businesses I've seen ever be able to understand what's happening and to outwit it. We can if we can see it. So please listen to the Salieri Report on entrainment that I did with Adam Trump, a wonderful, wonderful ally. Finally, Net Energy Plus. When things are changing in these extraordinary ways, you have to look at everything through the prism of what is an opportunity and the importance of being and playing Net Energy Plus. By that, I mean you need to give energy and you need to get energy. And so you need to find a way to work with everyone in your life. You need to find ways of understanding what they do and where they're going and teach them about you and what you're doing and where you're going, so you can always align with them to give and get energy. I feel like I have a moral obligation to give energy to those around me in a way that gives me energy. That's what, you know, keeps the optimization going. We used to, you know, do that very naturally with markets, and we had currencies or we had markets that gave us better prices than we get now. But we can all figure this out if we're willing to play Net Energy Plus. And what it means is that you're going to have to let a lot of people and things go, because when things are changing this dynamically, something that was economic last year, it's not economic this year. Somebody who you're ready to shift to 3.0, somebody you love is not willing to shift. You got to let them go and make the shift, because this is, you know, the reorganization of the consumer markets is literally a financial tsunami, and it's here, good or bad. And much of it is driven by the embracing of the technology by the consumers around the world. It is what it is. Finally, under Breakaway, I had to put up what I think is one of the most important stories that rocked my world this year. I learned about it in the first quarter. It's a TED speech. It's up on the blog this week. Scientists working on human-to-dolphin translator report their first successful interaction. We have created now a way of communicating directly with dolphins. As I said to our wonderful blog master who tipped me off to the story, fantastic. The human race has now learned to talk to a higher intelligence, and now we can start to hear the wisdom we need if we're going to evolve to a higher mind. If you've ever spent time with the whales or dolphins, it's a life-changing experience. I continue to believe that they are more intelligent in many respects than we are, and I, for one, think the idea that we could start to communicate more effectively with the other species whom we share this planet is absolutely delightful and very much in keeping with our theme tonight of spring fever. So as one ally says, just think of all the living beings in the planet as our potential allies, including the dolphins. Okay, finally, in the comic book, I wanted to point out to you, we had great resources in the first quarter. We listed out our first quarter Solaria reports, our top commentaries. They're all there for you. We had some questions, and before we close, I'd like to cover some of them. One question was, thank you for your fine work. In a recent segment, you courageously mentioned how hospitals are now potentially dangerous places to be. My sense is that very few people will be able to wrap their minds around the truth or all the darker aspects of the healthcare agenda, but you are correct, and all any of us can do is warn people and tell the truth. Thanks for that comment. I agree. I think it is very important when you navigate many of the healthcare systems that you understand that they are very regulated, they are very controlled, they are subject to all sorts of perverse economic issues, and when we go in them and navigate them, we need to be very, very careful and not assume that they have our best interests in heart. Another question, in the first quarter wrap-up, please talk about the implications of the internet being given to the UN's front group. Are alternative news sources like this one threatened by this development? What are some alternatives? Excellent question. I don't know what the alternatives are. What the author of that question was speaking about was the turning over of the naming conventions to a global not-for-profit out of the control of the United States. It was kind of an astonishing development. You wonder what the politics were. I suspect part of it was the politics of getting Europe on board to deal with some of the issues in Ukraine and some of the desire to get Europe to agree to moving forward with the trade agreement with the United States. But who can say? The reality is, if you look at the importance of the internet, as we move to systems where everybody's online, it gets progressively harder for the United States to say that they can control. But there's no doubt about it that that was an extraordinary PowerPoint. And what the ramifications are going to be is a big question. I think the danger, it wouldn't surprise me if one of the pressures for that is there's more and more threat of the balkanization of the internet. And I think that was designed to stop it, given the Snowden revelations. We are in real trouble in terms of our holding everyone into the system without balkanization and what that means to American businesses. So make no mistake about it, the Snowden revelations have been extremely expensive for the U.S. position and U.S. businesses in relationship to internet and internet access. A few times I've tripped across your discussing equity investment based on place, and you tried to get something like it going in the 1990s. I'm not sure I understand the concept. Do you have a longer discussion on it somewhere? Yes, if you check in the article section, you can find some of our old materials on place-based investment, and you might want to troll around in the articles and look at some of those. There's a backcasting, and there's an old manual we wrote on how to sort of organize an effort for a place. What I will attempt to do sometime this year is to do more on place-based investment because I clearly believe it's coming and I also think it's essential. One question they asked was, are you still working on the board game and what is the name of it? We had been working on a board game for place-based investment and stopped. It makes a lot more sense to do it in digital form. My question continues. My quest for getting the highest quality of information keeps getting better and better. I really like Doug Casey's stuff, but that there was just your puzzle piece. They're referring to the interview I did with Doug Casey on the Popsicle Index, or Doug Casey's group. I'm very grateful for your optimism and uplifting inspiration while putting a crazy and beautiful world together. A question. What are your thoughts on the recent comments from Christine Lagarde from Hopkins on the second in reference to the global financial reset? I have not heard those. I will endeavor to do that. Lagarde indicates that 180 countries will move forward with a reformation of the financial system to encourage an open growth more so to the emerging markets. The USA is holding things up, she states. Does the US dollar continue to weaken as China, India, and Russia posture against using anything but the US dollar? I've read the articles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There is no doubt that it's pushing around the world for a variety of reforms and changes to the financial system, including to deal with the debt burden. The United States has been holding out on reforms necessary for the IMF to move forward. Of course, we had a chill go through the developed world as Lagarde talked about a wealth tax, and I think many people are concerned about that. So is the U.S. balking at a global financial reset? Absolutely. And will it continue to do so? Yes, it's going to continue to do so, but it will, the reality of the marketplace is going to steadily chip away. I think in many respects, this continues to be a military question because the United States has enormous invisible weaponry. Two of the stories I put up for the comic book for this wrap-up include a story about invisible planes, and our new destroyer is a drone from the Navy. That's up on the blog this week. Next question. You mentioned in the Breakaway Economy Part 2 that you thought solar will have some role in the energy future. Some organizations have goals of moving to all solar and other renewable energies by 2050. Do you think this is even possible, given the challenges of current availability and access to rare earth minerals necessary for this technology? Very good question. I think, I believe, given the innovation going on in this area, that we're going to see, and it's hard to predict, but we're going to see many solutions to many of the materials issues. But it's because of questions like this, what technologies get adopted, what make it, what don't, are very tricky to decide. I'm not a solar expert, so I don't know. What I do see is a number of breakthroughs happening, as I said again, particularly with batteries, that could make an enormous difference. I continue to believe, because of the UFO evidence, that there are much more efficient technologies potentially available, but that all of these threaten the fundamental petrodollar model, and so it's not going to be until the powers that be are ready to bring breakthrough energy yet. You know, it's going to be one of the rabbits they bring out of the hat. When you ask a question, what's the exit plan on unemployment? One of the possible exit plans could be free energy. The danger, of course, is if you bring that kind of breakthrough energy, if you drop the cost of energy that much, you run the risk, many feel, of an explosion in population, and it's something that they're very concerned about. So watch the integration of new energy technology or making renewables really economic. Watch that be a function of the control they need for the currency and the control they need top-down. If you get a real Internet of Things and a virtual currency with top-down control, it makes it much more easy for the powers that be to move to much more aggressive technology that lowers the energy prices. let's see. I would like to know if you would be able to do a rundown or report on the boom and bust towns. As a guy looking for fortunes and safety, I really want to place myself in a boom state. Would you be able to guide us in the best and worst areas? That's a very good idea. I will think about who I can find to help me do that. But I will certainly do that as well. Next question from a great subscriber. Are you going to address the recent IPCC report on climate change in any way? I didn't talk about it in the wrap-up because whenever reports come out about climate change, they don't address all the different issues of geoengineering and what's being done to address the what's happening with the weather. And what I've said many times is until we're willing to put onto the table all the things going on with the weather, I don't trust any of these reports. I don't trust where they're going. And, and that's why I much prefer the Reddit kind of discussions on these issues. So I haven't brought it up, but there's no doubt about it. You're seeing more and more pressure and concern on the climate change issues. The one that was probably the most frightening was the story this year up on the blog of the academician who proposed we build huge walls to stop tornadoes right across the middle of the country. And it reminded me tremendously of one of Doris Lessing's novels about the planet that's dying and the extent of using environmental or huge walls to deal with weird weather. So very scary development. But anyway, so I haven't mentioned the report on climate change. I continue to look for people who I feel we could get onto the Salyer report to discuss climate change. But it's obviously a huge issue and one that I'm very concerned about is going to be abused enormously. And that's why I didn't address it. A final comment, our movie this week was something called The Lives of Others. It's a 2006 movie, German movie, on a surveillance situation in East Germany before the wall came down by the East German police, the Stasi. And it's a remarkable film, and I would love to tell you a lot about it, but I don't want to give away the plot. I really encourage you to watch it. It's about the kind of things that happen in a situation with very invasive surveillance, and it has lessons for all of us in living in a society that's very rife with surveillance. The thing that's beautiful about it is it tells a story of how humans continue to be humans, no matter how much the system tries to get them to be inhuman. And I cannot tell you, it certainly was something that happened to me many times. I was in a situation a while back where I was dealing with very significant physical harassment surveillance, and repeatedly the people who were supposed to be doing surveillance on me, became helpful and I wouldn't say became my friends, but, somehow we got into cahoots and things turned out in very interesting ways. And it very much fits with the theme of the movie. But one of our subscribers posted a comment that I just had to read. I thought it was a lovely description of this movie. I encourage you all to watch it, called The Lives of Others. Catherine, I first saw The Lives of Others here in Chicago a couple of years ago when it first came out, and I was absolutely blown away. I couldn't stop crying at the end. It's a quiet film full of nuance, and you have to pay close attention to follow the plot, but I have rarely seen such an affecting portrayal of the redemption of a single man, from eager participant in an evil system to conscious resistor. It's such a rewarding film that I hope everyone will see it. I think of it as a call to action for each one of us. Bravo. Anyway, The Lives of Others, I recommend it to you. A remarkable German movie from 2006. Well, that's it for our first quarter wrap-up. The link, again, for the comic book is up on the resource page as well as in the blog post. I hope you will access it. Please post questions. I'll try and follow up if I can. It's been a pleasure to have you for our first quarter report. Coming up next week, we have Precious Metals with Franklin Sanders. Precious Metals has been an area under great stress in recent weeks, and I know a lot of people have questions. I have not answered the Precious Metals questions today. Well, I'm going to postpone those, and we'll be asking them with Franklin. He'll update us on the market, and we'll talk about what's ahead a lot of uncertainty for precious metals. So I look forward to having Franklin next week. And then following that, we have Charles Smith on soft revolution and soft weapons. Very interesting discussion. So a lot coming up. I know it's tax time. My prayers are with you. Just turtle through, be impeccable, and remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.